Hello and welcome to the first episode of Off the Bench. I'm Lee from FPL Family.
And I'm Gianni from Fantasy Football Festival.
Gianni, it is great to have FPL back. It's great to have the Premier League back, but particularly exciting to be here, you and I, on the first ever Off the Bench podcast. How good is this?
Yeah, mate, I'm so up for it. Like the next 45 minutes, just chatting with you about so much that we saw over the weekend. Like it was an eventful game week one, wasn't it?
It was a fascinating game week. Some scores that, frankly, I wasn't expecting. I don't know. I mean, we'll get to it, right? But what on earth happened to Bournemouth? At Villa. Well, what happened to Villa, actually, I should say, right? I mean, Bournemouth were fantastic, right?
Yeah, they really were. Like, Scott Parker just does that job. Like, you can tell they've been so well drilled. And then two goals, one kind of from a set piece. And yeah, like, no one saw that one coming.
Yeah, I think Stevie G's got a bit of work to do there with some of their defensive set pieces. No doubt about it. But listen, the main talking point, and we're already seeing it because, as FPL managers, how fickle are we? We've seen it for seasons after season, right? Harry Kane already out the door by a lot of FPL managers, and no surprises to see the main man at City coming in, Erling Haaland. What a show he put on for us at the weekend.
Yeah, like Sunday night, we had price drop for Kane, and no coincidence. Yeah, like Haaland price
already,
rise with
right?
that. But
yeah.
Watching Haaland, like, Lee, is he in your team?
He is. I went for him over Kane. Yeah, yeah. You went for both, didn't you?
Yeah, I had both. So I'm kind of obviously very happy with Haaland, and I think I just need to give Kane a little bit more time. But watching Haaland, if you don't have him, you need to try and get to him. Like, I don't like using the term must-haves or essential picks. And there's very few players in this game that we kind of often list in that bracket, your Salahs and Trents. But Haaland's soon going to become one of those go-to players who just has to be in your team. And Bournemouth game week two, we'll speak more about captaincy later, but everyone's going to want to give him the armband after what we saw against West Ham, aren't they?
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And actually, I feel for the Kane owners and I feel for the Kane captainers because genuinely, I mean, Spurs played really well, right? I think Conte got it absolutely right. They had a little bit of a shaky start, and the Saints get the goal, and James Ward-Prowse off the mark, their top scorer from last season, off the mark already for this year. What a nice asset he could be for us longer term in FPL. But the guys that got Kane, if you're an FPL manager and you got Kane, don't beat yourself up. It was the right decision. Spurs run out 4-1 winners,
yeah,
but it just wasn't the right outcome, you know. So how do you feel now as a Harry Kane owner? I know you've got Haaland, so
yeah,
you're not going to move to him, but is Kane a stick now? Is he a sell, a buy, a hold? What are you doing?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I bought Kane for the very good fixtures. Yeah, it's Chelsea game week two, but from game week three, the fixtures look so, so good. And I bought him for all the right reasons.
Absolutely, yeah.
Very good pre-season, look sharp, Spurs are flying. You know, when do Spurs score four goals and Kane isn't involved? Like, I feel like that's just a little bit unlucky, and you just keep with it. But there is other forwards in the game that, of course, are catching my eye. Like, we saw Mitrovic have an amazing weekend, but also, so in the same fixture,
yeah,
Lee,
good, right?
About Darwin, like, I could very easily go Kane down to Darwin. I left that third Liverpool spot free. So, you know, he got 40 minutes. He had the highest non-penalty XG of any player in the game in 40 minutes across all 20 teams.
He's unreal. I'd like to dig into Darwin a little bit, if that's okay with you, because I know you, so you and I spoke quite a bit over the summer, and I know you were very keen to have him in your game week one draft. And I kind of can't help but feel bad because I kind of put you off a little bit. I think I said on Twitter, well, I don't know if he's going to start game week one. I think it's going to be Bobby.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be right. But here's a guy that is really making an impact. We saw it in the Community Shield. We saw it against Fulham in the way that he came on and changed the dynamic of that team. I think we're in for a bit of a Darwin revolution at Liverpool because the way that he plays in comparison to Bobby Firmino is very different. We were seeing that, right? What did you make of his performance overall? Were you impressed as I was?
Mate, I love a touch map, right? And obviously with Bobby's touch maps, you expect him to be very deep, and you see always Salah more advanced, usually whoever's on the left way more advanced than Bobby. Seeing the touch map of Darwin, it's just like completely different. And you see those maps and you go, wow, this Liverpool team is built different round Darwin. Like, it will change the way they play. And I'm really interested to know how this might eventually take some of Salah's points away from him. Because what we're seeing with Darwin is he's just a big chance hogger, isn't he? Everything falls his way. Now, I'm sure him and Salah are going to get loads of combinations together. But at the same time, you do wonder if Darwin will become like the go-to Liverpool captaincy option.
Well, do you know what? I can't help but feel a bit like that. And I don't want to be, you know, here we are knee-jerk reacting to game week one and going, oh, maybe Salah's not quite such a good option. That's absolutely not what we're saying, I don't think. But what we are saying is that Darwin is going to change, I think, the way that that Liverpool team is set up. I mean, I've watched a lot of, as a Liverpool fan, a lot of Liverpool over the last few seasons. Firmino is a very different player, right? As you suggested, Gianni, you're right. The touch map, if you look at it from the weekend against Fulham, he's kind of halfway between the halfway line and the opposition goal. So what does that tell you? That means that he's dropping deep a lot of the time, trying to move centre-halves around, very intelligent with his running. And of course, that benefits largely the two players out wide. And we've seen that with Salah and Mane for years at Liverpool. And we're starting to see it a little bit with the way that Diaz is adapting to the team as well. But Darwin's different.
Yeah.
Darwin's different. And he's not doing that dropping down. He is occupying defenders, but in a different area of the pitch. And you're right, his touch map was far closer to the goal than Firmino was. So what does that tell you? That, for me, says, I don't know, is that going to benefit the wide players quite so much in the way that Firmino works? It's a very, very different setup. You almost saw, actually, with the second goal against Fulham at the weekend, how Salah and Darwin almost got in each other's way a little bit there, didn't they? And in the end, Salah had the, you know, he had the kind of the sharpness to just, you know, side foot it into the back of the net. But you're right, there's definitely a bit of an evolution of this Liverpool team coming. And I do wonder what impact it's going to have in FPL for the likes of Salah and Diaz.
I love XG stats, right? And I just couldn't believe that in 40 minutes of football, Darwin attracted the highest non-penalty XG of all players over the weekend in any fixture like that. And we saw in the Community Shield, what did he get? A 30-minute cameo in the Community Shield and came on and straight away, big chance after big chance against Man City, you know, very good defence. Like, I just feel like he's going to be a real poacher. We've been blessed. Like, we now have Darwin and Haaland who are going to give this to us in the FPL game. Like, it's a nice choice to have, and we can't have them all. But at some point, we're going to want both those number nines in our team, aren't we? And if we have Salah as well, that makes me think there's going to be a lot of teams with those three premium attackers, not two. So do we need to start looking at how we're shifting money out of the defence for those that have gone big at the back? Or if you've gone big at the back, do you just go, no, the likes of Robbo and Trent and Perisic will start to deliver, give them time?
Well, I think we're already seeing what we thought we'd see over the summer, Gianni, which is there are so many good premium options in FPL this season. And I hope that's going to make for quite a differentiated game. I hope it's going to make for a lot of different looking teams as we go forward. Because look, Arsenal look good as well. We'll talk about them in a second. Yeah. The big at the back strategy, as you suggested there, do we want to take money out of that to fund the likes of Darwin? Well, listen, you know, Reece James had a good game at the weekend. Cancelo had a good game at the weekend.
Yeah.
I would expect Trent and Robbo to, you know, start picking up points as well. So if you've gone big at the back, and by the way, a lot of FPL managers on Perisic and some of the Spurs defence as well, which I like the look of given the way that Conte's wing-backs are playing, it's difficult for us, I think, to sit here and say that that is the, you know, the incorrect strategy. Yet at the same time, you're right, we're going to want Haaland and Son and Salah and Darwin, etc. Just to finish up on Darwin, clinical, direct, two big chances missed, by the way, and one big chance created against Fulham. So yeah, in a period of time where he didn't start, he had about, 35, 40 minutes in the game, was one of the standout stat performers for Liverpool. And he played only half the game. Incredible stuff. I think he's one to watch, definitely. Yeah.
Love that. And look, Liverpool, we obviously had to talk about, but the other, I mean, we need to delve into some of the other big teams. So look, let's make sure we talk City and Chelsea and Spurs and Arsenal. And look, we have to also touch on United. So out of those other five teams, where should we start?
I think let's cast our minds back all the way to the beginning of the game week. Let's go for Palace Arsenal, because that was a game on Friday night that I have to say, I think Arteta and the boys at Arsenal had it in their heads that they didn't want a repeat of game week one last season when they lost out to Brentford. Going away to Palace was potential banana skin, but they got the job done, right?
Mate, it's such a difficult place to go. Like, what an impressive result. 2-0, Selhurst Park. Like, for an Arsenal team that we thought might have weaknesses, well, what a way to start the season. And Arteta started that football match like a Man City team. Like, I can't help but think everything about what Arsenal were doing is trying to do a City. Like, the manager has obviously spent a couple of years with Pep as his number two. And we're starting to see that. That's so fluid in attack. And even the signings, he's gone and bought two of City's good players in Zinchenko and Jesus. And you look at Saka and Martinelli, these guys wouldn't be out of place in a City team either. So you look at it and you're going, yeah, he's going to be Pep 2.0, this guy in Arteta. And I just like what Arsenal are doing. They're going to be a real, real force this season. I think top four is going to be really interesting with them now in the mix. But look, Jesus so highly owned, and it was Martinelli and Saka that got the points, but I've no doubt Jesus's time will come, right?
Well, what did you make of Jesus? First of all, are you a Jesus owner? Because you've got Haaland and Kane. Have you got Jesus as well?
I do. I've gone big up top.
Heavy up top.
Yeah. Okay. I'm happy with that, knowing that I'm now going to probably be needing to move some of those funds around the front line, knowing Mitro and Darwin are now options too. But yeah, all three of those.
Not panic stations for me though on Jesus. I don't know how you're feeling about him. I thought he looked lively, looked sharp, bringing in other players into the game. So despite the blank, I still feel okay with having him in my team. I mean, he's, what is it? He was 76, 77%, something ridiculous owned for game week one, which was a record as far as I'm concerned for game week one in FPL. Incredible. So I don't know whether we're going to see the mass exodus that we might have done, because a lot of FPL managers are going to be looking at Haaland, and there'll be some other priorities that FPL managers will want to look at. But what do you think? Do you think you're going to see a lot of the community kind of getting off of Jesus, or are we going to see some patience?
I would like to think you give him time. Like Leicester, Bournemouth, Fulham and Villa, like the next four fixtures, like you can't beat that. So you have to give him time. But there will be some managers that are getting twitchy and going, oh, that's a similar, you know, I could save money and go down to a Mitrovic, for example. But no, you have to give Jesus time. There's a reason you bought him. Keep the faith. And what we saw from Arsenal is they're creating lots of chances. The front three has already clicked pre-season. And now the fixtures are there. Jesus is going to score points big. I'm sure of it.
It's so tempting though, isn't it? I even did a draft this morning before I came on, and I took Jesus out and put Darwin in. Here we go with the red goggles, the Liverpool fans coming on the podcast. I was like, but I can't bring myself to do it. The fixtures look too good. He only had one shot in the box at the weekend, which was my only concern, was that here we go. Here's a player that looked lively. Passed the eye test for me. I mean, despite no FPL points, I like to watch the highlights and see whether, you know, he actually had a good game. And I think that he did.
Yeah.
But when I look at the underlying stats, only one shot in the box. So I'm kind of looking at, well, I'm probably going to keep Jesus, but I'm also very happy that I've got Gabriel Martinelli in my team.
Yeah.
And those that have got Saka as well should be pretty happy as well. So if you're on the double up, if you've got two Arsenal attack, I think that's okay as well, by the way.
Yeah, I do. I saw a few drafts with three, which does seem a little bit heavy. But at the same point, I can see the argument for it, because their argument was, look, I've got Jesus is the best striker at his price point. Martinelli at 6.0 is the best midfielder at his price point. And then many said Saka at 8.0, there's not a better 8.0 in the game. But, you know, it's hard to argue with that. Although we did see, we should move on to Spurs, we did see an 8.0 delivering in that fixture in Kulusevski, didn't we? Like, he looks like the standout 8.0 asset. But it's very difficult to say that after one game week. Like, of course, Mount and Foden, they'll come into the mix. But what a performance that was from Kulu. Interestingly enough, he was up against Gineppo, who no one really knew was going to play left wing back.
Yeah,
like, they played a back five Southampton, and it was Kulu versus Gineppo, and he just rinsed him every time.
Yeah. What do you think about his long-term prospects in that Spurs team, Johnny? Because with Richarlison coming in, there was a bit of rhetoric over the summer with, is he going to get the game time? Is he going to be a bit of rotation there? Listen, Conte can't drop him after that performance at the weekend. And listen, we could talk, I think, for at least 10 or 15 minutes about, frankly, how, you know, I didn't think the Saints were good at all defensively. And certainly, I don't think they got out to stop those crosses. Whenever Sessegnon or Kulusevski or anybody that we know can cross a ball in that Spurs team got on it, the Saints really didn't do a very good job of shutting that down. They had all the time and space they needed to put the balls in. And if you see, certainly the first two Spurs goals come from exactly those sorts of situations.
Yeah.
But despite that, by the way, I expect them to come up against a better defence in Chelsea next week. But despite that, you're right, Kulu looked the one. The cross for the Sessegnon goal is so good. What a whip there was on that.
Yeah.
What do you think of the overall setup at Spurs, though? So Kulu, for sure, had a great game. But the wing-backs,
man.
Mate, honestly, I must have tweeted that, you know, Conte's wingbacks with the flames emoji going on. I must have tweeted that two or three times over the weekend. And we didn't see Perisic, who was our darling over the summer, because it looked like he wasn't quite fit, quite ready for the game. But, you know, Conte, in that system, the wingbacks are going to be gold. And when Perisic is ready to come into the mix over the next couple of weeks, he's going to be straight in my team, I think.
Oh, yeah, I feel like I made a bit of an error on Friday. Like, we heard the Conte quotes. We saw some of the images from training with the bib theory. And it was, you know, there was a few predicting that Spurs 11 based on some training photos. And a lot of the journos were right. And Perisic was left out. Sessegnon got the nod. And we all thought we could see that coming. Yeah, I still left Perisic in my team, even knowing he was very unlikely to start. Because I just thought, I'll get 30 minutes off the bench where he can still score points. And come game week two, or maybe it's not till game week three, he'll be in the team. And I know I'll be using a transfer to try and get him in. And I wasn't completely sold with the other 5.5 or 5.0 assets. And I just thought, save the transfer, keep him in. But knowing Sessegnon scored, and he'll probably be starting again against Chelsea, ideally, I should have made that transfer in game week three if I wanted Perisic. But I just know whoever the Spurs wingbacks are, as you say, they're going to be dynamite. And I'm sure first choice, you know, Perisic hasn't come over from Italy to play for Conte to sit on the bench. He's going to be first choice, but we don't quite know when. But again, on the right-hand side, you've got players like Emerson Royale. Like, these are really affordable assets, absolutely smashing it. I mean, I think Perisic will become nailed on the left, but we still don't know on the right, do we? There's a few options. Like, Emerson Royale might have played his way in. What do you reckon?
Well, he did okay, didn't he? He did okay. I'm still not convinced that he's got the best delivery on him, Emerson Royale. Maybe you could point the finger a little bit at him for the first goal in terms of, you know, he looked like panicked a little bit as soon as he gets one-on-one in the box. So I'm not sure that Conte sees him. You're right. Right-hand side is up for debate, I think. And actually on the left-hand side, just to finish up that piece of the conversation, you know, I'm hearing a lot of quotes from Conte about the fact that Perisic has come in, yes, to do a job in the first team, of course, but he's there to kind of coach and mentor Sessegnon. Yeah. There's something about Sessegnon that Conte likes, I think. The young, he's obviously very young, he's very malleable, he can learn a lot, I think, from Conte and from Perisic. And who better, by the way, to learn from than Perisic? You know, he's got that sort of mentality that I think Sessegnon would, I think that Conte wants to get into Sessegnon. So as keen as I am on Perisic, and I think you're right, probably going to be number one choice, I just have this thing in the back of my head about, is Sessegnon the long-term nailed on heir to the throne on the left-hand side for Spurs? I don't know. I just got that bit of a concern. But right now, you've got the others on the other hand side as well with Royale, who did have a decent game, except maybe that defensive lapse, I think, on the first goal. It's really hard, I think, to say that any of them are nailed on right now. There is going to be some rotation there. Yeah. And they are going to share minutes. It's difficult to say, to be honest with you.
And come game week 5-6, we know we've got the midweek fixtures coming into play and Spurs in Europe.
Like, Europe kicks in.
No one asks more of their fullbacks or wingbacks than Conte, which is why we rarely see them play in 90. Like, no matter who he's managing, he brings his fullbacks off sometimes at 45, often at 60, sometimes at 70. Like, so we're going to get huge rotation. But I still feel like, if you can get to 60 minutes with your Conte wingbacks, they're worth the investment, because 60 minutes of a Conte wingback is far better than 90 minutes of most teams' fullbacks, right? And Sessegnon's 4.5 million, Lee. Like, if he does get
That's
a good
crazy,
run of games,
mate.
Yeah, you like that a lot. But no, I mean, what are we doing with Kane and Son? Like, if you own Kane and Son, should you get twitchy? Like, it's easy for you because you've kind of gone Haaland instead of Kane. But if you're in Sam's boat, for example, or my boat, we own Kane, and I'm guessing Sam is planning to stick with, is she?
She's not. She has already pulled the trigger on Haaland, I have to say. She was part of the movement last night. Yeah, she did it live on our FPL family stream. So it was done and dusted before the price rise even kicked in. And I can see why a lot of people would do that, right? I can see that. For me, I'm certainly not going to pull the trigger on any Spurs in. I don't have any right now. And it was a bit of a, you know, hide behind the sofa moment when they were banging them in left, right and centre. And as I saw the scores coming in and I thought, oh, Sessegnon scored. And I realised that it wasn't Son or Kane on the assist either. I was like, oh, okay, well, I've got away with one there. And then and then there was an own goal, wasn't it? I thought, oh, I've got away with another one there. So I did feel like I definitely, as a non-Spurs owner, and I don't have Son or Kane, obviously, I felt like I got away with one over the weekend. There is no doubt that Spurs look dangerous. And if I was in the position where I had Kane but didn't have Haaland, I can see why he'd make that move. But if you're on Son in midfield, well, let me ask you the question, Johnny. If you had Son, would you move him straight over to Kevin De Bruyne, for example, for next game week? Because he actually looked the most advanced of the Spurs players. Very central, very selfish. He was on a lot of set pieces, 4 shots in the box, and 4 chances created as well, which obviously is, you know, that the assist from the corner I think he had as well, right? So, listen, I wouldn't panic on Son.
Yeah.
But if you've got Kane, it's going to be very hard to stick with him and not have Haaland for next week.
Yeah, I think if you're on Son, you don't make the move to KDB. But if you're on Kane, you do make the move to Haaland. There is a difference there. And
I think that's how I feel as well.
Yeah, like I just think with that City attack, and look, we should probably go there. I know we mentioned Haaland, but he needs a good 5 minutes of chat because this guy is just so, so good, isn't he? Like, I don't think I've been more excited about a player signing for our league, our Premier League, than Haaland. Like, we are signing here, like, arguably the world's best top 2, top 3 number 9s if you put Lewandowski or Mbappe into that conversation. But he's
around
Nunez, to stay.
Yeah, okay.
And Darwin, of course, who was more money, which is quite funny. But yeah, like, he's going to be around to stay, isn't he? Like, and the the FPL points at City historically have always been well spread, which is why we don't always go to KDB, because you wonder if Mahrez or Foden or Grealish or Jesus or Sterling will get the points. Yet now we have our guy. We know if we want to cover Man City attack, we don't have to take a punt on one of those players I just mentioned. We know you can go to Haaland and he's a captaincy option. For years, we've not captained Man City players in FPL, which seems crazy. They're the best team in the league, but we never give their players the armband. Yeah, okay, KDB got a bit of love last year, but now we have a standout captaincy option as well. And Haaland's just going to change this game for us. And he's a must-have. We said it earlier. You've got to have him in your team. He's just so good. And he's already fitting in this system without any time on the training ground, really. Wait till he gets up and running.
He looks unreal. I think Kun Aguero was the last time we kind of... We trusted a City player in the way that we do with, say, a Salah with the armband.
Yeah.
So no surprise to see, you know, the heir to the Aguero throne, you know, Haaland coming in. He absolutely blew me away with the performance. I mean, the second goal, just as an example, it looks as if he and KDB have been playing with each other for, you know, 10 to 15 years. So the understanding is already there. And that's what you get when you put two world-class players together. I don't know how you felt about individual kind of attributes of Haaland, Gianni, but one of the things that struck me immediately was his acceleration, you know, getting off the mark. Yeah. And he's a big lad, right? He's a tall fella. Mate, getting off the mark, that acceleration was unreal. Yeah. I think that he is going to be, once he gets into his stride as well, he's unstoppable. The pace is unreal. He won the penalty in that by displaying that attribute. And of course, he broke the back line of West Ham with that through ball from KDB as well. Yeah, he looks a must-have to me. He's going to score a hatful of goals. And it looks like on penalties, right?
Yeah. And when you see a player with that sort of like acceleration and then pace when he gets going, and then it's the timing of it. Like so often we see fast players trying to run behind. Yeah. And you just see the offside flag going up every time. But for him, like, I don't think I've seen him get flagged yet. And we saw him make that run in the Community Shield against Liverpool, and KDB didn't put the ball through. And I thought, we're going to see that run a lot. And I think Moyes said post-match, we saw that run in the Community Shield and we were very aware that that was going to happen. And my defenders were very aware. Yet still, you can't get ahead of it.
You're going to see that a lot though, aren't we? It's like, you know what's coming from KDB and Haaland and you can't stop it. It's still going to happen.
Yeah, I love that. The fact he's on pens as well, like we said about the spread of points with Man City midfielders and forwards in the past. Well, now we have a guy that we don't have to worry about the spread of penalties either. Like, we have seen so many different penalty takers, none of which have been that convincing in a Man City shirt, and Mahrez probably the most likely to be on them outside of Haaland. But look, Haaland steps up, game week one, slots it bottom corner, so confident. As soon as he goes down for the foul, picks the ball up and he marches over to that penalty spot.
Yeah, did you see that?
Love that body language. That's what you want to see, isn't it?
That is absolutely what you want to see. There was in the past in City, we've always been a bit like, oh, who's got the ball? Who's got it in their hands? And even this season, we're seeing a little bit from Arsenal, aren't we? You know, if you win it, you take it, all that sort of thing. A bit of uncertainty, which in FPL, we don't like. We like the certainty of a penalty taker. I would be surprised if he's not going to long-term penalty taker, Haaland. And if he's going to be, I mean, what do you think he can achieve? I mean, genuinely, we could be talking about a 30-goal. I mean, is it too early to say a 30-goal season is on the cards for Haaland? Because genuinely, it could be if he's on pens as well.
I don't think it is, mate. I really don't. Like, the fact he's got the winter off as well, because Norway aren't going to the World Cup. This guy gets a rest.
That's true.
If he stays fit, and there's a big question mark over that, to be fair. If we look at the last couple of seasons, this is a guy that picks up knocks. If he stays fit, if he gets 233 starts out of 38 games, you'd expect him to get to 30. I think he can average a goal a game, this guy.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's for sure going to be my captain in game week 2. I say for sure. I mean, I've got a little bit of a thing about maybe here come the red goggles again, right? Is Klopp going to get a reaction from Salah and co over at Liverpool? But for me, you know, you can't look past Haaland for game week 2 for captaincy. I think he's going to be the one. What else in that Man City midfield did you see, Gianni, apart from Kevin De Bruyne, which I know is going to be difficult for a lot of FPL managers to get to? We saw Foden starting on the right-hand side. We saw Grealish on the left-hand side. We saw Gundogan in the middle. You know, anything else there that you're thinking, okay, I want to double up. I want to go Haaland and somebody else in midfield.
Mate, Pep is all about momentum. And knowing they don't have midweek fixtures, I think we'll see the same 11 game week 2. And with that in mind, I think Foden does become an option. Like, I know we haven't seen Foden playing on the right a huge amount in the last season and a half, but he loves playing there and he can turn inside. He can go on the outside. Like, this is a player very comfortable in any position along the front three. And I think Foden at 8.0 could be an option. I know he didn't have the full preseason, but Pepper said this guy just needs a couple of days worth of training and he's back in the mix straight away. Grealish, I still think there's a bit of hesitancy with his play. The amount of times he gets the ball in good positions.
Yeah, not quite right, is he?
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
I want to see the Grealish of Villa. But I don't think we've seen that yet. It shouldn't be a confidence thing. This is a guy with real swagger, but he doesn't seem to drive at defenders like he did at Villa, does he?
I don't know whether the... And this is a kind of an easy narrative to kind of pick up on, but I don't know whether the kind of the price tag and the expectation and everything else is maybe weighing on him a little bit. I don't know. He just hasn't got that, you know, you're right. Haaland sort of comes in and he's got a similar sort of price tag, all right, not quite as much as Jack, right? But he's got similar price tags, certainly similar expectations in terms of what he's going to achieve. And bang, here we go. Game week one, done. Confidently picks up the penalty, slots it in, no issue. Bags a brace. Happy days.
Yeah.
Whereas with Jack, there's just this kind of tentativeness about his game that we didn't see at Aston Villa. So I must admit, you know, at 7 million, I was looking at him over the summer thinking he could be gold, right? If we have the second season that we see from a lot of Pep's players, but we haven't seen it yet. I do back him to come good. He's obviously a quality player, right? And in the lead up to Qatar, he's going to want to hit the World Cup in form. But yeah, didn't really see it again, I don't think. So right now, I'm on Phil Foden. You know, I've got to just take the 3 points on the chin over the weekend. Certainly not going to take him out ahead of Bournemouth at home, because genuinely, I think he looks like Pep's, well, difficult, isn't it, to say Pep's preferred midfielders, because we all know, and we've all suffered from the Pep roulette in previous seasons. That is well documented. But if you look at Mahrez, you look at Grealish, Alvarez is still a bit of an unknown quantity. I do think he looks really, really good. Yeah. A forward in FPL, interestingly, at 6.5. So the midfielder, if you're going to go there, for me, is still Foden. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Foden for me. And you look at last season's minutes even, and he got so many more minutes than Grealish and Mahrez. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Grealish will come good. I don't know if he'll become a better option ever than Foden this season. But one guy we can rely on is Cancelo at the back. Like, again, bonus points magnet. He picks up a yellow card, which means he loses BPS. But still clocks two bonus. And another guy that did that, again, like another defender in the game that did exactly the same thing this weekend, clocked bonus, got a yellow card, is Reece James at Chelsea. This is a guy I don't have in my team who's 6.0. And I watch Chelsea and think they might be a team that just sort of win 1-0 quite a lot. I don't think that they're a little bit underwhelming in attack. And with that, you go, oh, Chelsea defenders, why am I not covering them? Like, even Mendy in goal at 5.0, I think he was probably overlooked a little bit pre-season. Ramsdale rightly got a lot of love at that price point, but Reece James is 6.0. Last season showed us when Reece James is fit, he competes with Trent and Cancelo. Yet these guys are way more in price. So I think Reece James, you've got 17 crosses at the weekend. 17, like those assists will come.
I saw that. Yeah. Watching that, you could see that. Feel he did a lot of crosses, right?
Is he in your team?
He's not, but I have to say, I do agree with you. He was getting on the ball a lot. He had three chances created at the weekend. Lots of crosses. But my concern, well, tell me what you think. My concern is that who's he crossing to, right? Aerially. I mean, Kai Havertz is good aerially, no doubt about it. But elsewhere from that in Chelsea, I'm kind of thinking, well, lots of crosses, but no end product, no one on the end of those crosses to actually make the most of them.
Still don't know who Chelsea's number nine is going to be. Like, Sterling led it. We saw Havertz pre-season. Will they buy someone? You know, the window is still open, and that does change things for FPL. Is there any signings you're thinking could be coming into the league, like, that would change our thinking with FPL? Because we've seen a couple of bids for forwards at Man United, and I just wonder if United sign a nine and it's not going to be Ronaldo playing in that slot, or Martial, we don't know. And that could be an interesting one, because United players have been priced really, really affordably this season. But we need to see them deliver before we even look at their assets, don't we?
We do. And that's the reason I didn't go with a Rashford or a Sancho or a Bruno Fernandes in the end, because I just felt like going into game week one, I didn't have enough data, I didn't have enough knowledge about Manchester United. They had a reasonable pre-season. I think they beat us, they beat Liverpool 4-0 early on in the summer. So all the signs were good coming into, out of, the pre-season and coming into game week one, but there was still a little bit of jeopardy there. There was still a little bit of the unknown. And because of that, I didn't go in on them. And I kind of was proven right there, because He's got a lot of work to do, isn't he, Eric Ten Hag?
Massive, massive project. And the core group of players is still the same. The same group that has failed in years gone by. So, yeah, I think they need a lot of time. And for those tipping at Man United to be like, yeah, the top four season or, you know, could still win something, give him time. Like, this guy needs a lot of time on the grass, on the training ground before we see vast improvements there at United, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you think that's one of your big lessons learned, Gianni, from the weekend? I must admit, I'm coming out of the weekend thinking, patience, learn my lessons, you know, just hold fire. Don't jerk the knee. Don't be too quick with my transfers. Although having said all that, easy for me to say as a Haaland owner. If I had Kane, I didn't have Haaland, I might think probably differently. But what would you say are kind of you've learned from the weekend?
Yeah, I said pre-season, like, I like the idea of backing the teams we can trust. And many of us, when you look at our 11s, kind of had 8, 9, 10 players from the big 4 or 5 teams that we've been discussing. But with that in mind, there will always be some teams that kind of catch your eye in the first couple of weeks. And I must admit, I was watching, I watched a lot of football over the weekend and saw, if I didn't watch live, I saw the highlights of the game. And a team that did catch my eye were Leeds United. I just think, like, under Jesse Marsh, this could become a mid-table team. And it's like having a new signing in Bamford. And he's 7.5 in FPL, which is a little bit much.
Great.
But I just think that team could have goals and Bamford could be an asset. He had some big chances over the weekend. I think he got an assist, but he could have had way, way more. And we know he'll likely be on penalties as well. And Leeds have got some really nice fixtures. So I like that. I like that shout a lot. And look, Aronson in midfield as well. We saw pre-season assist for fun.
He was alive a while, isn't he, Aronson?
Another one that caught the eye. So Leeds are probably the team that I'm keeping a very close eye on. Did you have any that kind of not so sexy teams, people haven't really looked at their assets that you went, yeah, keep an eye on them?
Well, listen, we could talk about Bournemouth and the way that they performed against Aston Villa. Although what I will say about Bournemouth's fixtures coming up is they have got a tough run next three. So Scotty Parker was presumably going into that game at the Vitality thinking, you know, we've got to win this. We've got to get off to a good start. Otherwise, feasibly, it could be end of August and they might be struggling. But I mean, I agree with you on the Leeds thing. Aronson in particular, and there was a lot of Leeds fans on FPL Twitter that were calling him out saying, this kid looks as if he could be the real deal. And he was a real live wire. He had a goal disallowed, I think, shared a lot of set pieces with Harrison, who also caught my eye. I thought Harrison had a good game. Almost seemed to be kind of the main man now, Harrison, at Leeds, if not Bamford. I mean, Bamford will find his feet and I think will, you know, come back as the main man. But Harrison certainly has 7 chances created, 1 big chance created. So being on set pieces is going to help with that chance creation. Depends on whether he or Aronson get the lion's share of the set pieces going forward. But listen, he looked lively. You know, we talk about the eye test and, you know, watching the games, watching the highlights. Aronson absolutely stood out for me. So Leeds, one to watch, I agree. And also one to watch, another player that I've been talking about most of the summer and then didn't put in my game week one team, would you believe, Gianni, because I went for Bailey from Aston Villa. But I was talking about Josh De Silva and Brentford and how they might get off to a good start to the season. You know, difficult fixture game week one going away from the Brentford Community Stadium, but now the fixtures look pretty good and someone had to pick up the creative mantle from Christian Eriksen now that he's gone to Manchester United. So Josh De Silva at a bargain basement price of, I think he's at still 4.5, right? I mean, if he can show that form that he showed in game week one over the next few weeks, he's going to make a mockery of that price. So I've got my eye on him as well.
Yeah, like, could be the standout enabler. He didn't start, but he came on and what an impact. You'd think he's played his way into the 11. Left foot curler. I spoke to a Brentford coach a couple of weeks ago who said the year they got promoted, everyone spoke about Ivan Toney as the best player, and he was. But Josh De Silva was a standout player in that promotion campaign as well. And last season, I think he had a lot of injuries. So yeah, could he fill that Eriksen gap? Yeah, very, very likely. But there's a few 4.5s or enabled players in the game that did stand out. Like Pereira at Fulham, 4.5, he's in many of our teams and he occupies that sort of second or third bench spot for many of us. Yes. I was watching him against Liverpool thinking, this is a guy I'll probably want to put in my 11 when the fixtures are nice. Yeah, I mean, he caused you a few really problems, didn't he?
Without a doubt, he and Mitro seem to have a real good understanding already. And he was on a lot of set pieces, taking corners. Yeah, it takes a lot to give our back four some headaches.
Yep.
And he certainly did. Him and Mitrovic certainly linked up really, really well. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of lessons learned for the weekend, yes, there's a lot of good premium options, as we know and we've discussed. But in the bargain basement as well, if you want to afford those premium options, you're going to have to start looking around in the bargain basement. And you know, I'm happy to be shopping around in there, quite frankly, with the likes of Andreas Pereira, with Josh De Silva, with Aronson from Leeds, and some others that we've pointed out over the course of this podcast. I can already feel my team starting to, you know, adapt and evolve over the next few weeks. I have to say, though, moving on a little bit to game week two and just looking forward to next weekend, I don't think I'm going to make a transfer. I think I'm pretty happy with how my team's set up. What are you feeling? Because obviously, as a Kane owner, you'd be forgiven for going, oh, I'll go straight to Haaland then. But you've got him as well. So what are you thinking?
Yeah, my plan originally was to, this is everyone's plan usually, right? You go into game week one and you think, I've got a really nice, shiny new squad. I'm going to give it a couple of weeks. So my plan was always to roll the transfer. Now, sometimes we can't do that. Yeah. We have an injury, we have a suspension. So my plan is still to roll the transfer. However, as always with FPL, you have that monkey on your shoulder, don't you? Going, oh, what about me? Think of this new player.
The little devil.
I've got Darwin Nunez did that to me all pre-season, mate. And you taught me out of him, and rightly so. You called it. You said he won't start game week one against Fulham, and you were right.
I'm going to try and talk you back into him now. I'm going to try and talk you back into him. He looks great.
So, I mean, I have an option here where I could save some money and go Kane down to Darwin. And Darwin has incredible fixtures. I have no doubt he'll start now against Palace at Anfield. But at the same time, I can't look past the reasons why I bought Harry Kane. I didn't buy him for game week one. I bought him for game week 3, 4, 5, 6, where he's got really nice fixtures. So it's a very, very tricky one there. If I do make a transfer, that will be the move. It will be Darwin in for Kane. But I think I'm going to roll and give Kane another couple of weeks. Chelsea's not an easy fixture for Kane, but if I give Kane game week 2, I have to give him game week 3 as well.
Yeah, and Spurs look good, right? At the end of the day, it wasn't as if Spurs put in a bad performance against Southampton. Kane was probably a little bit deeper than you'd like, yep. I think. But listen, Chelsea didn't look full of beans themselves, right? They've still got a bit of, you know, getting up to speed to do, I think, down at the bridge. So I can see, and we've said before on the podcast, I can see why you'd move Kane to Haaland because of the fixture. And that's, for me, the standout fixture is Man City versus Bournemouth. I can see there being a lot of FPL points and a lot of game weeks being made or broken on that fixture over the weekend. But if you've got Kane, you've got Son, and you want to give them another week or two to bring home the bacon for you in FPL, I can see why you do that because Spurs look decent. One of the other fixtures that stands out for me, Gianni, is, you know, Erik ten Hag, after game week one, got to go and get something at Brentford now, isn't he? Which is not going to be an easy game on the basis that, you know, Brentford with a decent comeback in game week one, Manchester United looking a little bit undercooked to say the least. First home game of the season for Brentford under the lights on a Saturday night on TV. This is not a place I think that Erik ten Hag and Manchester United want to go next weekend, I don't think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Although it is only a 5:30 kickoff, Lee, and it is British summertime. We might not have too many floodlights.
Okay, the lights might not be on. Okay.
I like it. You're adding the drama here. I like it. You're right. It's a tough place to go, isn't it? I saw a lot of good teams go to Brentford last year, Chelsea included, and really, really struggle. So having seen them come back against Leicester. And yeah, I think you're right. They go into that game and you'd be a brave man to bet against Brentford there. I genuinely think, like, yeah, United will be slight favourites, but you wouldn't be surprised to see Brentford get a point or three.
No, Tony off the mark already. De Silva coming on and making an impact. There's a reasonably good vibe around Brentford after, you know, it's going to feel like a win, that from game week one. It's definitely going to feel like a win. And for every good bit of vibe that I'm feeling about Brentford, I'm not feeling it about Manchester United. But listen, they cannot go to Brentford and lose and win, you know, back-to-back defeats United to start the season. Because I think then in game week three, I've got a feeling, I'm just going to look at my fixture ticker here. Yeah, all right, they've got Liverpool at Old Trafford. So again, a difficult game in game week 3 for them. So he's going to need to get some points on the board, Erik ten Hag, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I feel like there's a couple of standout fixtures for some fun FPL punts as well. Like I'm looking at Fulham, right? They go to Wolves, which doesn't look like the easiest of fixture, but having seen Wolves play against Leeds and having seen Fulham play against Liverpool, Mitrovic is going to have a spring in his step, isn't he?
Like, absolutely.
Think that for Mitrovic could be a really nice game. Like that Wolves defence, they're moving, they're kind of evolving this Wolves team from a back five to a back four, and I'm not sure if it suits them. And I just think Mitrovic can bully that Wolves back line. And for some reason, there's very few FPL managers and sort of our very engaged community on Twitter that own Mitrovic. He's 11.5% owned. But if he scores again this weekend, that's just going to rock it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I have to say, I bought in Andreas Pereira as a bit of 4.5 bench fodder. But
start him.
I don't see it. I can see me starting him in this game. And I'm looking at my team right now and I'm kind of, the big decision is either do I play Andreas Pereira or do I play Kieran Trippier away at Brighton? Both reasonable picks, I would suggest, but I'm leaning just a little bit towards my, you know, inverted commas, bench fodder there with Andreas Pereira because of the performance he put in against Liverpool. So I think he's probably going to get the nod. And I think in terms of captaincy, just to move over to that, I don't see me going off of Erling Haaland, do you? What are you saying about captaincy?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I go Haaland after what we saw on Sunday. My only concern, and this sounds ridiculous, because Man City against Bournemouth on paper is so, so good. But the one thing we know from Scott Parker teams is they're very well drilled. They'll be very deep, right? And that's I just wonder if they could frustrate and do a real park the bus jobby. But look, if City score in that first half, it could get ugly. Like, it could be a 5-6 niller, right? But if they don't score in that first half, it could be very tense. And it's 70 minutes in and they're still knocking on the door. And yeah, they win 1-0, but it's tight. Yet the Liverpool game will be fairly open because Crystal Palace, they always have a go under Vieira. This isn't Roy Hodgson's Palace. This is Vieira's Palace. They've got a lot of flair players. They're expressive. They have a go. Eze, Zaha. And I just think that could be quite a nice open game for Salah. But no, I mean, I'm caveating it with I'm still probably going to be captain in Haaland. But as a Liverpool fan, do you look at that and think, oh, Salah at Anfield, should I still be looking there or are you pretty set?
No, I am looking at it. I am looking at it. And it's largely down to Klopp's comments after the Fulham game, right? There was definitely an admission, and it came from him and it came from Robertson. There was definitely an admission that we weren't good, right? The attitude wasn't great. The performance wasn't great. And you know what, Klopp is a lot of things, and he's certainly an honest manager, right? Certainly an honest manager. And I know this quote about the pitch being dry is the bit that the journos have decided to pick out from his comments. But actually, let me tell you, around that quick comment about the pitch being dry was 4 minutes or 5 minutes of, you know, we weren't good enough. We've got to pick up the pace. We've got to set the tempo. And there was a lot of, you know, don't get me wrong, Fulham were very good as well. I'm not taking anything away from Fulham whatsoever. But Liverpool need to improve, and Klopp will not accept that level of performance again, I don't think. And because of that, are we going to get a reaction from Liverpool and from Mo and maybe from Darwin in that Monday night game? I mean, if you were to bring in Darwin, could you captain Darwin Nunez against Crystal Palace at home? It's not beyond the realms of possibility, Gianni. You've got to be tempted by that.
I mean, that would be bold. That would be bold.
It would be.
Because will he get the 90? But yeah, I mean, if you want to really have fun with it and you want to go for a pun, I could think of worse puns. And look, Monday night's game is under the lights. 8 p.m. kickoff.
Under the lights. Yeah, well, 8 p.m., at least the lights will actually be on. You're absolutely right. So the answer to your question is, I am thinking about a Liverpool player captain, but I can't look past Haaland at home to Bournemouth after what he's just done. I think I'm going to have to go there.
I think I'll probably do the same. Mate, it's been awesome chatting. I've loved that little review of the weekend and loving this new pod as well. But don't forget, the FPL pod will be back on Thursday with an in-depth preview of all those talking points from game week 2. So good luck to you and your teams. And then listen out for another Off the Bench podcast once the dust has settled on the weekend's FPL action. Mate, it's been awesome chatting. I'll see you soon, mate.
Yes, good to see you, and good luck in game week 2.
Yeah, you too. See you guys.